Rinkerbuck's book on the Oregon Trail has been showing up on best of lists as this year winds down. The Oregon Trail, A New American Journey, is an epic account of traveling the length of the trail, the old-fashioned way, in a covered wagon with a team of mules, an audacious journey that hasn't been attempted in a century, which also chronicles the rich history of the trail, the people who made the migration, and its significance to the country. Rinkerbuck is no stranger to grand adventures. His first travel narrative, Flight of Passage, was hailed by the New Yorker as a funny, cocky gem of a book. His new book is The Oregon Trail, and he'll be doing a talk and signing at Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont, tomorrow, Friday, December 4th at 7 p.m., and a talk and signing at Northshire in Saratoga Springs on Saturday, the 5th of December, at 7 as well. It's a great pleasure to welcome Rinkerbuck to the roundtable this morning. Rinker, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Joe. It's great to be here.
What in the world were you thinking, sir?
Well, people think it was, for me, it was just an adventure, but it was deeper than that. I started studying the Oregon Trail history, about 2008, somewhere back in there, and I was very intrigued by the fact that the rich history of it was nonetheless a different history than what we'd been taught as children or what we would see in a Hollywood movie. For instance, women played a very significant role. Religion played a very significant role in pushing people out west. The pioneers were terrible environmentalists. And there wasn't really a single trail, a single set of ruts. It was really more of a collection of trails that the pioneers followed west. And this was an iconic moment for American history, just very, very important. So I was driven by the history at first and writing a book that would be a revisionist history. But then when I came across the statement in one of my history books that the last documented crossing of the Oregon Trail was in 1909, I said, wow, that's the book. Why don't we cross it and see what's out there today, how it looks now from the perspective of a covered wagon. And I had a background with horses that made me feel like I could attempt this. And it just started from there.
Was it always your intention to write about it, that you wanted, that this was going to be a journey that you were going to take and would chronicle in a book?
Yeah, the two interests sort of started to merge, but it really started out with a love of history. And then I said, well, you can do both. And it makes for an interesting challenge for a book because there's kind of an amalgam of agendas. There's our adventure, there's the history that we pass along the way. And then, of course, because I grew up in a horse family and my father had taken us on a covered wagon trip when we were young, I had to add the third element, which was flashbacks to my family history, difficult but loving relationship with my father, and that sort of thing. So it was quite a challenge getting all three of those agendas into a single book.
When you decided to do this, as you say, you were looking in at the history. This is 2,000 miles or so, six
yeah.
states, Missouri to mm-hmm. the Pacific Coast, and the actual trail and its use. How did that color what you wanted to do of taking this actual journey of not just going in the footsteps and the wagon ruts, if you will, but also to flesh out questions you had about what was accomplished in this journey?
Well, the big question for me is what was out there now? You know, what were we going to see now, and could you still cross it in modern times? And the big surprise was when we got out there, it's still very wide open country. There's a few places around, say, Scotts Bluff and Boise where there's suburban congestion, and I was worried about those places because it's harder to get through a developed area with a team of mules. But it turns out it wasn't that difficult at all, and we kind of sailed right through. I was trying to accomplish the trail and say what it meant for the country and what it would mean for me personally. And I think there was also kind of a personal quest there. I was bored with life. I reached a point where print journalism really wasn't working for me anymore, et cetera, et cetera. And I needed a drastic change. And at the same time, I'm kind of obsessional about history. And those needs merged into a book.
So I should note at this point that as a child, when you were when you were young, you took a trip across the state of Pennsylvania with your father in a wagon.
Yeah, and I think what happens, this is really a book about the fact that adulthood in many ways is completed childhood. And it wouldn't occur to many people to do this because I had taken a covered wagon trip as a child. It was just a short one. We went from our farm in New Jersey to Pennsylvania, maybe 150 miles one way. Nothing like a 2,000-mile epic across the West. But it enabled me. It gave me the confidence to know that I could do it, and I was pretty much familiar with what are the things that you would have to do every day. And so it didn't intimidate me. Most people would hear about something like this, and they go, well, you're kind of nuts. You know, you kind of lost your brain, you know. And this is going way beyond, you know, midlife crisis. And that's why I talk about this principle I have of crazy ass passion. You have to be crazy ass and passionate to get certain things done. And you know, the book is all about, well, what is the actualization of crazy ass passion? And, you know, it was really rigorous. We went over a lot of terrain that the Oregon Trail experts said we would never get a wagon over. Rocky Ridge in Wyoming, California Hill in Nebraska. We didn't have a covered wagon train. We weren't part of a covered wagon train and thus didn't have the advantage of all the shared labor that the pioneers had. And we used no motorized support. That was the big thing about our trip. If you go out west now, you can pay $1,000 a week or something and get some little covered wagon ride across the land or cutoff or something.
Right.
And at night, you're joined by pickup trucks towing chuck wagons and pickup trucks towing showers and porta potties and air-conditioned RVs and everything. That's garbage. We weren't going to do that at all. And so we just camped on the plains every night. We had no motorized support, and we designed a special little commissary cart that we towed behind the wagon. It was actually modeled on a Civil War commissary cart, but that's what gave us the freedom to cross the plains. We carried enough of our supplies and then could replenish them as we went along.
So you emailed your brother and asked him to borrow a saddle, and he pretty much invited himself to go on the journey with you.
Yeah, and I was very lucky he did, because he was by far the better mechanic, and we had a lot of wagon breakdowns and everything, and there's nothing Nick can't fix, and a better mule man. But, yeah, I thought initially I was going to go alone and that I would lead the team from a riding horse, because I knew that riding horse would be pretty useful, because we would run into some places where we'd have to scout the trail ahead of us, because it's marked but not very well in some places. So I needed my riding saddle back, and I sent Nick an email, and he said he's a very different kind of guy and uses syntax like an old pioneer person himself that puts me in the mood for travel. But he basically emailed me back and said, just tell me where or when to send the saddle. Why didn't you tell me you're going to Oregon this year? I'm coming, you know. And that was the beginning of a great relationship. And we're very different. That was another element of the book. We're very different brothers. I'm sort of the, you know, refined, pretentious guy who went to college and, you know, I pay money to have my car detailed every once in a while. And Nick is very blue-collar and contemptuous of anything that has to do with socialization or high-end living or whatever. And, you know, he spent the whole trip reminding me of what an inferior human being I am because I have a college education. And so very different guys, but somehow this, I call this collaborative DNA presenting symptoms of severe bipolar disorder. But for some reason, this combination of two brothers, both very different, worked, and we you know, we're the first guys in 100 years to get a covered wagon across the Oregon Trail.
And let us not forget olive oil. I mean, this book does have a Steinbeck quality of Travels with Charlie and the classic road trip literature, yet in a wagon train and with a beautiful Jack Russell Terrier.
Yeah, you're correct to point that out. Obviously, well read. Without the dog, you don't have the road trip. You don't have the road trip literature.
Right.
But what was so great about olive oil? She's a rugged little rough coat Jack Russell Terrier. So when we started the trip, I was going, oh my God, we got to bring olive oil along because she's Nick's dog, and Nick really loves olive oil. And wouldn't he felt that the trip would be something that she'd remember for the rest of her life and be happy that she'd made this. And I was a little resistant because olive oil is kind of like one of these filthy little dogs that rolls around in the mud a lot and burrows for rats in the manure pile and then comes over and jumps on your lap, you know.
Right.
And I thought it would just be sort of fun to have her along, not, you know, and I could get over my, you know, resistance to a filthy dog. And then we got out there and there were significant parts of the trip where I had to scout ahead of the wagon on foot. I probably walked about 700 miles of the trip at one point or another, usually when the trail had disappeared and I had to walk ahead and find the trail. And it's rattlesnake country, and it's also prairie dog country. And for some reason, the mules really didn't like prairie dogs. And so, and of course, I didn't want to get messed up with the rattlesnakes. So olive oil would jump off the wagon, and she's very smart, and we would say to her, run, you know, run circle, do a patrol. So she'd run circles around me in a semicircle in front of the wagon. And if you know Jack Russell's, you know, there's going to be nothing alive, you know, in the area they're patrolling.
Right.
And in addition to that, we got to a couple spots where the cattle were really tough. They were longhorns. They're very mangy and bad. You know, this is crossing Wyoming ranches, and the mules didn't like them, one of the mules in particular. And so we just, olive oil, chase them away, get rid of them. She chased the cows away, and then we finally had a situation where the mules ran away on us. They jumped a fence and took off, and we asked the rancher, well, how far are we going to have to chase these? And he goes, I don't know. We don't do miles in Wyoming, but this is a 1,000-acre pasture, a 1,000-acre pasture.
Wow.
So olive oil, we just kind of gave her the right motions and body language, and olive oil finally helped us corner the mules at the corner of the next fence line, which was 3 miles away. So, yeah, she was. You're exactly right. You can't have a road trip without a good dog. And olive oil is just very, very colorful and fun. So that was great.
I love that your brother thought that the dog, because I agree with this entirely, that mm-hmm. the dog needed to experience this. That this was something the dog was going to enjoy, because terriers, like many dogs, are working dogs, and to give the dog a purpose and to help you out and to have your brother think, well, yeah, I have to have my dog experience this as well, is, I think, a beautiful notion.
Yeah, well, Nick is one of these guys that he really considers the dog a member of his family, a part of his humanity. And I don't question that. I'm just not quite that much of an animal lover myself. So he would say things like, when he was trying to talk me into bringing olive oil, you know, he would send me these emails in his inimitable syntax, you know, like, don't worry, olive oil will keep any coyote or mountain lion away. There will be no animal that will try and get, you know, because it's all one run-on sentence.
Right.
And if it's a cold night, I'll let her jump into your bed with you, because believe me, at a cold night, she's toasty. And yeah, he just felt, and so it really did become that. I mean, at night in camp, I just loved having olive oil jump on my lap. You know, we would eat our daily ration of Hormel chili, no beans, and you know, we'd always put an extra can in for olive oil. And I took long walks behind the wagon many days because it's very tiring, very exhausting being on the wagon all day. Didn't affect Nick as much as it did me. And I would get sleepy, and I was afraid that I would fall off the wagon, in which case you'd, you know, maybe get crushed by the wheels or something. So Nick would take the wagon along alone, and I would walk behind for 3 or 4 miles to kind of get my circulation going again. And Olive Oil would jump out of the wagon with me, and it was just enormous fun. You know, she's this Jack Russell Terrier who thinks that she can. The antelope is the fastest animal on earth. It can sustain 40 miles an hour. Endlessly, it can sprint up to 60 miles an hour, but Olive Oil would chase after it like she's going to catch it, you know.
Olive Oil doesn't know, sure. Give
yeah.
it a shot.
Yeah.
What ultimately do you hope? The book is so much fun, and it's great history and a beautiful story. What ultimately do you hope people get out of it?
Well, I'm more, I guess two things. I'm more driven by the history than the adventure, believe it or not. I took the adventure and went through all the arduous challenges of doing a trip like this in order to write a better history. And I think the reaction that most people have had to the books and to the book and critics and so forth is, wow, this really gives us a portrait of what the trail really was like to cross as opposed to the myths that we've passed down to our children. So that's an important agenda. And the second agenda is I think, you know, if you have dreams, you should actualize them. You should do them. And I'm a little worried this time around because when I wrote an earlier book, Flight of Passage, about a youthful airplane trip that I took to California as a teenager, the book came out and it did pretty well, but particularly became sort of a cult book among pilots.
Mm.
And for the past 10 or 11 years, I've had to be answering emails from guys who got in their own airplane and retraced our route to California and back. And I had never occurred to me that people would read a book and then want to go out and do the same thing. Although, of course, it's very common with, you know, Bill Bryson's A Walk in the Woods or Norman McLean's fly fishing memoir and so forth.
Right.
But I'm kind of panicked right now because, I mean, this was really hard to do. You have to know what you're doing. You can't just go out and buy a covered wagon and team of mules and hit the Oregon Trail. So if the reaction to this book is the same as the reaction to my earlier books, you know, we're going to have an awful lot of crashed covered wagons out there. but it is the second agenda. I think, and it doesn't matter what it is. I think that it's good to break out of the normalcy of your life. It's good to break away from routine and do something. And even if people aren't going to do that, the book inspires them to think about that and know what it means to do that.
Well, the name of the book is The Oregon Trail, A New American Journey. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Rinker Buck, a great pleasure to have you on the program, and best of luck. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Joe.
The name of the new book is The Oregon Trail, A New American Journey. Rinker Buck will be doing a talk and signing at Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont, tomorrow night, December 4th at 7 o'clock, and a talk and signing at Northshire in Saratoga Springs on Saturday, December 5th, also at 7. The book is The Oregon Trail, A New American Journey. It's published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.